episode 124.
The first thing I look for in service advisors that I'm going to work with and I'm going to personally coach is they have to have a servant's heart. If you don't have a servant's mindset or a servant's heart in this business, then you shouldn't even been in it. If you're focused on selling and sales and, hey, I'm going to make a ton of money here and I'm just going to sell, honestly, go sell stocks and bonds or go sell real estate, go sell something else. But the automotive repair business is way too hard to just come in here and sell. There's too much negativity that's wrapped around the customer experience. And if you don't have a servant's heart, it's not going to happen.
Welcome aftermarketers to On Point from Remarkable Results Radio and a special interview from an auto care industry professional. On Point. Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here, and thank you for listening to Remarkable Results Radio, available for subscription from iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio. And welcome to episode 124 with Jeremy O'Neill from Advisor Fix. This episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus for serious technical training and support online, on site, and on demand. Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageGurus.com. Hey, ever wonder how you can improve your automotive aftermarket business? Well, you're actually in the right place to learn from people like you how they achieved and executed their success. Listen and learn each week and strive to take just one thing away from you, one thing that sparks an idea or action within you that you can implement or pass on. And then come on the show and tell me your story of remarkable results. Now, meet Jeremy O'Neill, president of Advisor Fix. If you are a service advisor, employ one, or want to become one, this episode is exactly for you. Jerry began his career as a service advisor and quickly moved into service management at the dealership level. In 2010, Jeremy founded Advisor Fix with the mission of helping shop owners and service advisors revolutionize their sales and customer service experience. Inside this episode, listen for knowing the goals of every service advisor, why chivalry is still king, the three top traits of a service advisor, why communication skills are vital to the position, and how you can learn to communicate with everyone, that most shops approach the sales side versus the client agenda of the business completely wrong. Now prepare yourself for an enlightening interview with Jeremy O'Neill and learn how focusing on your client's vehicle agenda serves you well. Here we go. A warm welcome to Jeremy O'Neill, president of Advisor Fix from Wrightwood, California. Jeremy, are you ready to go on point?
I am absolutely ready, and I'm honored to be here, Carm.
All right. A service advisor training. So what's the big deal? Why is it important? Now, I know the answer, but I got to hear it from you.
Well, the simple answer on that is the service advisor is the gas pedal for the automotive repair shop.
Yeah.
You either make the sale or you don't. I mean, there's no half sales in this business. You either – customer says yes to you or not. And we're in this industry right now where there's a big shift coming. I believe it's one of the best five-year periods to be in this business. However, we've got a plan for the future. And the margin between success and failure is razor thin right now. And if you're a mediocre performer – you're not getting mediocre results. You're getting substandard results. And Carm, I got to tell you, I've never seen a time where we've had shops that are doing $100,000, $120,000 a month in sales. 3 months later, they'll do $40,000 a month in sales. And at the same time, I've never seen a time where somebody can go out and start a repair shop and go from no client base, no sales, to over $1 million a year in sales within 12 months. So we're definitely living in turbulent times, which means the service advisor, you know, they hold the key to success or failure for the automotive repair shop.
I'll never forget hearing some podcast guests just actually probably in the last 2 or 3 months that were told so seriously as an owner that they need to get out of the way and hire a service manager. And then they said, yeah, but I didn't have any money. And their business coach would say, you need to do this. Trust me, they did. And they made all kinds of money, definitely paid for that person. And then I asked why. Now, you can confirm this or not, Jeremy, but they said once he got out of the way, the margins went up and the disciplines that were put on the service advisor were being held up where the owner necessarily wouldn't
conform? Because he wanted to do business with everybody. He gave things away. Is this part of why it's important to have not only a service advisor, but strong policies around the job?
Oh, Carmen, that's a great insight. Absolutely. And I remember I got started in this business in 1991 at a small gas station in Southern California. I was going to school to be a certified public accountant. And if anybody listening knows me, they know that that's not my disc does not match up to being a CPA. It just okay. doesn't happen there.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So I remember back then, that's when technicians were making certain percentage on labor sales. They also made certain percentage on parts. And it wasn't uncommon for a technician to write the ticket, call the customer, sell the work. And about that time is when service advisors really became popular. And one of my first mentors, Jim Hunt, did coaching with my dad, was down at the shop. And I remember when I started as a full-time service advisor, we actually adjusted our rates to compensate for the pay that the service advisor position did. I think the reason a service advisor is so important is because, they're focused on sales. They're driving car count, they're driving sales. If you're a business owner and you're running the shop and dealing with operating a business, realistically, how much of your day can you focus on driving car count, driving sales? If you have a task list that is 25 tasks deep and you're thinking about, I got to get payroll done, and the phone rings, you're not going to be at your best personality, putting your best foot forward to convert that lead, but a service advisor will, because they're focused solely on that.
So an owner shouldn't be on the counter.
Oh, I don't like to make blanket statements of saying yes or no. It depends on the business. I would say this. If the owner's going to be on the counter, they better make sure they've got great time management skills and they have other outsourcing support to take a lot of the owner duties off. I can tell you this. If I've owned my own shop, and there were times where I went back on the counter to turn things around. So there may be a time where an owner has to go on the counter. So just to say that an owner shouldn't be on the counter, I don't want to make that blanket statement. But realistically, what are we doing here? Are we creating a business or are you creating a job for yourself? Now, if you're creating a business, then the owner shouldn't be on the counter, because if you're going to sell that business or operate the business from an absentee owner standpoint, you can't be the service advisor.
By the way, that was a great answer. That was really a great answer. Hey, is there a quick tip you can give when a service advisor meets a new customer for the first time?
I'll give you a five-letter word. Smile. S-M-I-L-E. And be happy.
Wow.
I am amazed at... I listen to hours and hours of incoming phone leads. I will literally be at shops. And, chivalry is dead today. I remember, I had two dads. I had my stepdad and my real dad, my biological father. And my stepdad was a blue-collar worker for Pacific Bell. He was a lineman on the phone lines. And I remember what was ingrained in me from an early age was chivalry. You open doors for women. Yes, sir. No, sir. I didn't call his friends their first name. I used Mr. Egan, the last name. And I'm amazed. I will be in shops today and an 8 a.m. appointment rolls up and it's for a Dodge Caravan. And the lady pulls in. You could clearly see this out the front of the shop, right? The car pulls in. Lady gets out tumbles a three-year-old, and she goes to the back and pulls the stroller out. Now she's struggling to get the child into the car, into the stroller, and work her way up to the front door. And then they struggle with opening the door and wrangling the three-year-old who wants to go run in front of cars. And the people behind the counter who are supposed to be there to serve people are just sitting back there with their arms folded watching this.
Yeah.
And I want to smack them upside the head and say, you know what? Get off your ass and go open the door for this lady. Help her. You know what? Go meet her at the car and do your walk around at the car and provide that service. So chivalry is dead. So one answer, smile, be nice and be friendly.
I got to tell you about the smile piece. I went to Disney University and, they teach their people. I mean, apparently they spent hours and weeks with teams in the past saying, what's our customer service focus going to be? And they boiled it down to simply look them in the eye and smile.
Absolutely. Eye contact and smiling. And I just had the Disney experience. We just got back from a Disney World vacation and a Disney cruise with the family, trip of a lifetime. And from a consumer standpoint, that company, man, they get it. And I view other hotels and customer experiences different now just from my 10 days with Disney. Now, my retirement suffered by about 5 years for paying
sure
for that
it
trip.
Did. Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm. But guess what? Out of all the negativity, the precious life moments that they give those feelings and the positivity, it really helps. And it I talk about, you know, I offer a 100% ironclad money back guarantee on all my services. If somebody's not happy and I made a promise to you and it didn't fulfill, I'll write you a check. I've never had one client take me up on that. But I guarantee you this, if I went to Disney's customer service and I told them I wanted my money back, they probably would have given it to me. And as upset as I was at standing in line because I didn't have fast passes for some of the rides, the magic moments they created still overrode those negativity. So interesting concept.
You just mentioned chivalry. And can you teach that in a class?
The first thing I look for in service advisors that I'm going to work with and I'm going to personally coach is they have to have a servant's heart. If you don't have a servant's mindset or a servant's heart in this business, then you shouldn't even been in it. If you're focused on selling and sales and, hey, I'm going to make a ton of money here and I'm just going to sell. Honestly, go sell stocks and bonds or go sell real estate, go sell something else. But the automotive repair business is way too hard to just come in here and sell. There's too much negativity that's wrapped around the customer experience. And if you don't have a servant's heart, it's not going to happen.
Got it. I believe you would agree that being a top tech is real hard work. Keeping up is a full-time gig, considering vehicle technology, repair procedures, and diagnostics. It's refreshing to know that Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Guru is there for you. It's been designed by and for technicians, the best in the industry. And did you know there's no other comprehensive program like this anywhere? A big part of the program is the nationwide network of Guru's on-site training and technology centers. There, you can get your hands dirty with the equipment and tools you use every day in real work-related situations. When online is your perfect way to learn, do it with Guru's 24/7 online academy with a huge catalog of training course options. And with the Guru's on-the-go technology fleet, they bring the latest products and demos right to your shop. And this year, you get free stuff from the Garage Rewards Loyalty Program. You earn points towards gear from your favorite Federal Mogul Motor Parts' brands. And what is really great, it costs nothing to join, and you'll start earning points immediately. So head on over to fmgarageGurus.com and learn all about Garage Gurus training, support, and get in on the rewards. So, Jeremy, three most important traits of a service advisor.
Let's see here. First one, the servant's heart. That's the very first thing I would look for. When I talk to shop owners about hiring a service advisor, I always encourage them, break it down to your top two or three candidates. Make sure you at least run a full DISC assessment on it, some sort of personality assessment on them, and then take them to dinner and watch how they interact with the service staff and how they are with people in public. A dinner will give you 1 to 2 hours with somebody, and it'll really let you know if you want to work with this person or not. So first one is a servant's heart.
All right.
The second one, you have to have a burning desire to succeed. And this transcends everything. A burning desire to succeed, it goes to your physical goals, your financial goals, your business goals, and you've got to come in every single day on fire at a 12, and it's a competitive nature and a drive that you have that your boss can't give you. And I'll tell you this, when I get a call from a shop owner to ask me, Jeremy, how do I motivate my guy? If you're asking me that question, you've got the wrong person at the counter.
Okay, third trait.
Okay, the third trait, communication skills. Okay, two sides of the communication skills, intrapersonal and interpersonal. Intrapersonal skills are self-communication skills. Are you self-regulated? Do you understand your emotions? Do you understand yourself as a person?
Yeah.
And then interpersonal skills are how you deal with other people. Communication is everything.
Okay, important goals of a service advisor. What are they thinking about for the business every day?
Every single day. Sales, gross sales, number one.
Okay.
Number two, car count. You can't have sales without car count. So the first thing when I show up and I'm writing service or selling in a shop is I figure out how many cars I got to bring in for the day. And I go after that. That's one of my first goals that I achieve. If I get my cars in, the sales will follow.
Okay.
So car count. And then gross sales. And then obviously you have your performance metrics, your profits that come in behind that. And we really focus on the gross profit on the part side and the labor side as well.
The forgetting curve. It's a very interesting concept out there. You've probably remembered only 10% of what you went to training for. Is there a way that you can prevent some of the loss of knowledge transfer in training classes?
I believe there is. There's two sides to it. If you're going to go to a class, and if you've ever attended one of my courses, you know I do this at the end. I always encourage students to go in to their workbook and pull their notes out. So at night, you go in and you rewrite your notes. So any class that I attend, before I go to dinner, before I'm done for the night, I go back through my workbook and I take a blank sheet of paper and I rewrite what I wrote down. Because mm-hmm. the notes that you write during a class is that spark of imagination that lit something off inside your brain that said, that applies to me back at work. You rewrite these notes and then you create your action plan. And then what I do is you got to take specific action within the honestly, 10 days.
Okay.
I like to do a 10-day action plan immediately. So 5 days a week, you're going to go in. So it's a two-week plan, really. Take your first thing that you want to get done and ingrain it in the next 10 days, and you get that done. Typically, when I go to a class, I don't try to install more than three items because, honestly, after 60 or 90 days, it's out of sight, out of mind, and you've gone back into your old habits.
Does it work?
It does. Absolutely.
How about your students? Do they tell you, hey, Jeremy, good disciplines?
They do. I was thinking about that because I wanted to answer the question honestly. The hardest part about what Advisor Fix does and what I do, it's easy for me to go out and get results. So I can show up to your shop tomorrow and I can set sales records all day long for you. But for me to teach your service advisor to do that, that was the hardest thing in my life that I've ever had to learn, getting others to get results. So it does. It comes from a number of things. And we've built a very robust coaching dashboard and platform to help with the accountability, the reinforcement training. And honestly, it comes from that desire to succeed. If you have the desire, you'll push through any obstacle in your way.
You had mentioned just a few moments ago, DISC. And I didn't want to highlight over that because some people may be scratching their head and saying, oh, what the heck is that? And I really want you to go into it a little bit. And the best way that I could describe it is if I've just can't get along with someone and I just can't seem to make the connection right. And I'm having my conversation with someone instead of having theirs. Could you go give us like 2 minutes on DISC and why it's important in your training?
Absolutely. DISC is the four different quadrants of personality style and human communication and behavior. So every person has a different level of intensity of the DISC factor. Now, DISC basically stands for four things. D is dominance, I is influence, S is steadiness, and C is compliance. So you've got these different quadrants of personality traits that people display in. Human behavior is observable. This goes way back, you know, since man's been on this planet. As a service advisor, your success is going to come down to your ability to adapt your communication style to your customer's communication style. So, for instance, somebody who's a high C, high compliance, I don't match well with them. I'm a high D, high I. Dominance, I go after my goals, and influence, I love human interaction and building great relationships. My paperwork is atrocious. I work in piles. I'm not organized. I'm not very neat, but I get results. So when I get a client who I identify as a high C, I'm going to make sure that I slow down my pace a little bit, that I'm very detailed with everything that I go through, and that everything is very precise and detail oriented. It took me about 18 months to really get to where I can have a conversation with somebody in about 30 seconds, identify their primary behavioral style. So really, it's just about understanding and observing people's behaviors and then adapting your style to match their style.
Jeremy, how does a service advisor interact with an underperforming technician?
Carm, that's a loaded question there, but it's a very important question, especially for shops today. I mean, we live in an age right now where I've had owners say, I don't care how bad of an attitude he has, a technician, there's no way you're going to upset him because I don't want him to leave. So it's very hard to find talented technicians right now, probably the hardest gap to fill in our industry. It all comes down to the third trait that we look for in all of our service advisors, communication skills. It's no getting a technician to respond is no different than getting a customer to say yes to a repair. It's all about your communication skills, finding out what's important to them, and being able to communicate in an open environment that's non-threatening. And I love a drama-free environment. When I do on-site consultations with shops, the first thing I do is I round everybody up and I tell them, look, for the next 2 days I'm here, there's a word that we're not going to bring in. It's drama. If you bring drama to the table, you're going to leave the conversation because we are going to get to the source of the problem, help you guys build a better business. And what that means to you guys is a better performing shop, a more secure job for yourself, and you're going to be able to achieve your financial goals. So is everybody on board with that? So it's no different than influencing a customer with a sale. You just have to learn how to communicate with them at their level as well.
Excellent answer. Time management, is that critical for a service advisor to have good practice?
It's probably the most important, one of the most important things. I just completed a new book called The Effective Service Advisor, which is the ultimate guide for time management for service advisors. One of the biggest challenges that service advisors live in, we live in a world that is very reactive. So I could have my day planned out perfectly, but guess what? At 8:05, my 8 o'clock appointment didn't show up, then the phone rang, and then Mr. Johnson walks in. So I have to react all day long. I'll share this tip with everybody out there. The most important thing that service advisors can have is what I call a floating task list. So you got to come in the morning, write your task list down. These are things that you have to get done that pertain to sales. Now, remember, the most two important things that you're trying to accomplish every day are car count and sales. So if these tasks are administrative tasks, I try to delegate those somewhere else. And then I focused on my sales tasks. So we live in this world that is on demand, push a button, I buy everything I want. So if you've got leads that you're trying to follow up with from yesterday, I got news for you. They already went somewhere else. Okay, so get to the point where you can get things done quickly, efficiently, and clear task list as quickly as you possibly can so you can stay on point and get the important things done.
Here's great news. There's a new brake pad on the market that can stop a pickup SUV or CUV up to 50 feet sooner than other leading pads. And on top of that, it lasts up to twice as long as previous designs. Sound too good to be true? Well, Wagner Brake did it. They designed their new Wagner OEX brake pads that stopped up to 50 feet sooner than other leading brake pads. To prove it, they got Link Engineering, pretty much the industry standard on brake performance testing, and they got their proof. But Wagner needed more convincing. They asked 400 top technicians to put Wagner OEX pads to the test, where it matters most, in their shops and on their customers' vehicles. 99% said they saw a noticeable difference in the new brakes, and 95% said they'd likely recommend them to other service professionals for their customers. Now, soon you can get Wagner OEX brake pads in your shop. They'll be available nationwide with coverage for 95% of U.S. pickups, SUVs, and CUVs. Get the full story. Learn about the science behind Wagner OEX and check coverage. Go to WagnerBrake.com. Deferred work. You're recommending to a customer that they need to have this work done, and 50% of the customers, say, for example, say no to it. Is there a strategy for the service advisor to bring that business in?
There absolutely is. Most shops approach the sales side of this business completely wrong, meaning they're going to be focused on the sale and the shop's agenda. Okay, hey guys, we got to sell $10,000 today. Let's go out there and sell, sell, sell. What I teach is you have to be focused on the client agenda first. So the strategy that we teach is, and I have a graphic for this that I give all my students, and we laminate it and we draw all over it. The first thing you have to do is identify the customer's vehicle timeline. I need to identify how long you've owned the vehicle, how long you plan on keeping it, and what's your mileage target for the vehicle. Before I started Advisor Fix, I went back to work as a service advisor to test all my material out, rewrite everything. The shop I went to work for had a goal. The mission of the shop was to get every client's car to 250,000 miles, okay, if you follow our maintenance plan. I looked at the owner. I told him he's an absolute idiot. Okay, it's probably why I got fired 4 months later. But the issue I had with that was, what if I have a client that's only going to keep the car for 100,000 miles? Now my recommendations, he might think that I'm over-recommending stuff to get to my goal on his vehicle, 250,000. So what's more important is matching your goals with the client's goals. What did they want to get out of the vehicle? And then what you do is you create a customized maintenance and repair plan based on the condition of the vehicle and their driving habits and where they're going to go with the vehicle. And then the deferred work, we do a good inspection. We tell the customer everything that needs to be done. That deferred work, we then put it into a plan that fits the client's budget. And typically, within 12 to 6 months, all that deferred work is done on a schedule based on the client's budget. You're putting your customer in a position of buying instead of feeling like they're being sold.
So if I say, no, I don't want to get that done right now, you could say, now listen, you had told me you plan on keeping this car for 150,000 miles. We need to think about this. If not, you may not make that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I have a really good friend in Phoenix area that has a shop, and I was explaining this process, and the challenge with that, you can go too far on what's called the manipulation side, where you're using information you gave me earlier. Now I'm strong arming. Hey, Carm, you told me you're going to keep this car for 5 more years. What's the deal? You better take care of it, or you're going to cost yourself more money.
That may not necessarily be the right way to say it.
but I agree. So the timeline is what unlocks the customer's fear of the sale. And then they get enrolled in the buying process.
Bingo. Yeah, that's, I guess, what I should have said, yes.
No, you're a bright individual. You're awesome at what you do, man. I love listening to your show. The timeline, though, and then when you get that, typically it's going to boil down to two things, time or money. So then the question is, hey, you know, Carm, I'm just curious. When it comes to taking care of these concerns today, is it more of a budget or a time concern for you? Well, it's a budget. Obviously, not many people budget $3,000 for car repairs, do they? You know, either the car breaks or, you know, they had $50 laying around. It's that throwaway money for the oil change. So now what I've got to do is help you get a plan together. But the most important thing is I fully disclosed everything that the car needs. I've given you one price. Now you know what your vehicle needs. Now I'm in a position of being that trusted service advisor and helping you make a plan that fits your needs and budget.
Is maintenance the only thing we should look forward to in the future?
Well, maintenance schedules are almost they're what the manufacturers have done with maintenance schedules is driving me crazy. I looked at a 2013 Buick Enclave yesterday, and there's literally oil change or oil service. And I don't like to use the word oil change anymore because cars don't need oil changes anymore. What they need are maintenance services. And we've got to get back to being maintenance masters and knowing what specific vehicles need at certain intervals. I don't think the maintenance is the only thing that we're going to need. I think what's going to happen is the manufacturers are stripping down maintenance so low that we're going to go back to the repair side. And we're seeing repairs now that we haven't seen before. And cars, you know, it's interesting. I shared a story with you when we talked the other day on the Tesla, how we had a client that came in and put a deposit down on two Teslas. And the service writer and I looked at each other like, oh my gosh, there goes our business, right? You know, our business is always going to evolve and adapt, and Tesla's not going to sell 100% of the vehicles that are on the road, but we're going to have to adapt to it. And I think we're going to have a blend of maintenance. I think there's going to be emerging technologies and emerging repairs that come out. So going back to how we started the show, if I was an owner, would I be on the counter? No. If I was an owner, I would be studying emerging technologies and getting my business in front of the shift that's coming in the next 5 to 10 years.
What's the ratio of service advisor to techs that really makes an efficient business?
That model's shifting as well, and I'll share a little bit of my thoughts on technology today. It depends on the shop. If the service advisor is looking at their own parts, making their estimates, and sourcing their own parts, it's typically one service advisor to two technicians. If you have a parts person and somebody helping them estimate, one service advisor can deal with 4 to 6 technicians if they've got their estimates built. So one of the things that I believe that the Mitchells of the world, the AllDatas of the world, that these software companies have to do is make these estimating programs more intuitive. So when the technician's putting in his notes and he says, you know, has the brake rotor spec is under spec, that the software goes out and pulls my parts in from my vendor and builds my estimate for me, that I don't have to reach out and do that. Because that's probably 30 to 40% of a time of a service advisor that's very expensive right now. The other thing that's going to shift, it's already happening, is you've got check-in kiosks that are taking place. You've got push notifications, communications to consumers where, you know, a good friend of mine, Chris Cloutier, started Auto Text Me. Great program. It's a text updating feature for communicating with customers. The push notifications, when I use his program, it saves me about 30% of my time from taking incoming calls on status updates for clients. And the results we get from customers where we're texting them updates through the process automatically, they love it. It's where we're at. So those technologies are going to replace part of the service advisor job.
What a great hook in engagement of your customer to the business. It's no different than a prescription text from a drugstore.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's all these, you know, Facebook sends you push notifications that let you know when your friend's reading, right? And all this stuff.
So yeah, right. Yeah.
That's the world that we live in. And it's interesting to me that, you know, I'm not going to put a percentage on it, but the majority of shops are still picking up the phone to call customers. I don't even check my voicemails anymore. How many people don't check voicemail? You know, how many people get upset when a phone call comes in? They're like, why are you calling me? Why don't you just why don't you just send me a text?
Oh, I know. And we were talking about the age of chivalry, which is really shows, you know, people of boomer age and how they were brought up. And now how we deal with all the new technology. It's some great, great points. Telephone skills, that's got to be way up there.
It's definitely one of the top three as far as skills. If you another company I love, and I'm, you know, I'm not affiliated with them in any way, but I just love what they do is RepairPal. They have a way of sending, you know, leads to shops, and they record the calls. And the skill set of the service advisors that are out there when they're dealing with customers who are inquiring about a price, it borders on almost angry of, why are you calling me asking me for a price? Just bring me your car. And I got news for people. The day of telling a customer that you just have a policy of not giving a price over the phone, they're gone. I mean, that ship sailed 5 years ago. And I have access to everything on my cell phone at the push of a button. And you're an automotive repair professional and you can't give me some sort of an idea of what this repair could cost me. And what happens is we play this game with customers where we tell them, you know what, we need to see your car first. Well, if a customer's calling and they say, hey, I have a question. How much would it be if I needed an oxygen sensor on my vehicle? Well, okay, tell me the concern. I understand all that. But the customer's standpoint is this. If I did need the part that I'm calling you on, how much would you charge me? And if you're not going to give me the information I want, I'll find somebody else who will.
What you're saying is that the cost of entry, even though that may not be the final repair, has got to be done.
You actually have to fulfill the customer's curiosity, okay, of what would the repair cost. And I know what's going to happen. You're going to get some comments. You're going to get some feedback that said, well, Jeremy O'Neill said to give pricing over the phone. That's not what I said. We go back and listen to it. I said just having a policy of not giving a price over the phone is dead. We have to evolve with the times, right?
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
To become so entrepreneurial that I'm unemployable.
That's pretty powerful. And are you living up to that advice?
Absolutely. And if you need some past employers that I've worked for to validate that, I'd be happy to provide you with a list of it.
Jeremy, if all jobs paid the same, what would you be doing?
I'd be doing exactly what I'm doing right now.
What do you do to recharge?
Oh, well, a number of things. I've got three kids, so spending time with my kids is amazing. We live in a beautiful area. We have a motocross track on our property, so I can go home, fire up my dirt bike, and go rip off a couple laps and, you know, get the aggression out. I ride mountain bikes. We're very active. So hiking, outdoors, all that stuff. And then, you know, staying in touch with current trends, trying to keep pace with people like Gary Vaynerchuk and reading new material and, pushing the envelope of what we're doing. You know, one of the things I do also, at the end of every year, I burn every workbook and then I go back and I rewrite everything because what worked yesterday is not going to work tomorrow.
How smart. Cool. Good stuff. Well, you know, I learned a lot.
Me too. Thank you. This was fun.
So we've been talking to Jeremy O'Neill, president of Advisor Fix from Wrightwood, California. So Jeremy, give us some words to live by.
There's a concept that it really resonates with me right now. Each and every single one of us has a special and unique gift. Our purpose is to get that gift delivered to the world as quickly as we possibly can, because we don't know how much time we have here on this planet.
Powerful stuff.
I got goosebumps. Absolutely. So there's my burning desire right there.
I enjoyed.
And Carm, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Hey, guys and gals, thanks so much for listening and hanging out with us. Looking for additional show notes on Jeremy O'Neill from Advisor Fix? Maybe his bio and links to his company? Well, find them exclusively on the show notes episodes page on Remarkable Results Radio. And that's also the place where you can subscribe to be an insider and get the pulse on every new episode release and find top industry links and resources. Hey, I really do appreciate your engagement with the podcast and would ask that you help spread the word. Your help is needed to unite our industry, and I'm grateful for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.